don't you? From the City of Angels, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And our very special guest tonight, John Lear, as we talk about mining operations, structures on the moon. You know, it was my late aunt, Shafika Corregula, who knew Ingo Swann. And Ingo, through his remote viewing and in his book, Penetration, said that there were indeed structures on the far side of the moon. It's an incredible story. We'll be back with more with John Lear on Coast to Coast AM. All right, John, you've got a lot of people staying up late tonight. Poor Liz in Ann Arbor, Michigan says, George, I'm a college student. I've got to get to bed. I have to stay up and listen to this whole show. It's going all around the country. John, let's talk a little bit more about the moon, and I want to get into some other things with you. The Gary McKinnon story, which is absolutely incredible. He's the one who hacked into U.S. Websites, military websites, including NASA. Back to the moon for just a moment. So you say we went up there in 62. What do you think the purpose was? Was it to begin mining or just to do more military work?
Well, we have laser weapon on the moon. We have a lot of stuff up there. I don't know all that's up there, but the mining is the big thing. And you might wonder, who owns the mineral rights of the moon? Did you ever wonder that?
Good question.
Well, you'll find that 95% of the mineral rights on the near side of the moon and 50% of the mineral rights on the back side of the moon are owned by a group of three individuals. They're Americans. They've had it for 25 years. And in fact, this same group owns the mineral rights to most of the solar system. And you can check this out in the website, or Google Universal Mineral Leases Registry, and you'll find their names. They're government contractors, some of them.
Are they
Dr. Joseph A. Resnick, Dr. Timothy R. O'Neill, and Guy Kramer. And they own all that. Now, how they got it, I don't know, but it's theirs.
I mean, did they have to write a huge check for this?
Apparently, they didn't have to write anything. But, you know, just Google
Weird.
It.
Okay.
Google Universal Mineral Leases Registry, and those three names, Resnick, O'Neill, and Guy Kramer, and they all have little government contractor, little companies that contract stuff to the government. Now, you know, there was a space treaty that said that nobody would own the mineral
rights. That's right.
No country. But apparently there was nothing in it that said an individual couldn't own it.
So these three are out there. They're alive and kicking somewhere.
Absolutely. They're working. They've got companies. And they're the ones who hold all the rights.
That's incredible. I got to find them. I've got to find these people. Can you imagine if they are mining the moon, how much money they are making?
Yes. If it's helium-3, they could be making billions and billions. Now, we don't have, the capability, at least that we know of, to use helium-3. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Bob Lazar this evening, and he sent me an email. I said, can we use helium-3 right now? He says, no, it's kind of a future fuel. Once we get fusion reactors working, and on an efficient basis, helium-3 would be a useful fuel. As of today, though, we have no fusion reactors, nor have we produced a sustained fusion reaction. Or have developed the containment necessary to allow the reaction to continue without eventually destroying the magnetic or laser system.
So we could be just storing it up.
We could be storing it up, but the problem is that the plasma generator in the fusion reaction is as hot as the interior of the sun, and it's difficult to deal with the stuff like that. It also generates neutrons, which destroy the matrix of metals, making them brittle and crumble after time, no matter how tough they are. So it's thought that a liquid metal would be better as a shield system, and liquid continually reseals itself as opposed to solid metal that retains and accumulates the neutron damage. Now, what we're looking there in our Aristarchus, that big, beautiful thing there, is probably a fusion reactor.
Is it possible that these structures on the moon might have been created by intelligent Earthlings millions of years ago, looking at that old movie From Earth to the Moon, maybe we went to the moon a million years ago. Maybe there was a very high advanced civilization and they set some of this up. Is that possible, John?
That's possible. You know, we're told that that the Earth is the only habitable planet in the solar system. And it's not. All of them are habitable. All of them have people similar to us, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Neptune, Uranus, Pluto. They're all habitable things. And NASA calls them giant gas bags. But the only giant gas bag I know on our solar system is spelled NASA.
Now, if you're sitting down for this, Lex tells me he's done some quick research that two of the three players you mentioned about the mineral rights, Resnick and Kramer, he says they were involved with HARP.
Oh, really?
Now, that's an incredible angle.
Yeah.
I mean, they're everywhere, these guys.
They're everywhere. And if Lex will Google moon mining, he'll just see how much stuff is on there. And, of course, NASA says we want to go back in 2020. And what we think is now they want to dovetail their, you know, dovetail this in so that they won't be caught up there, you know, mining. They get this all this thing together where, you know, in 2020 we're going to go up there and mine the moon when it's already there. I don't know whether they want to, don't want to be caught in the lie or what, but when I talked to somebody about this program, NASA's position was, look, John, we don't want to be called liars. If you could just say that we haven't been totally forthcoming.
He said they were on a couple years ago with ART. We're going to check that and see what they had to say.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that could be an interesting
Excellent. Angle.
Maybe they were just talking about HARP. I don't think they were talking about their mineral rights on
Well, they've had these mineral rights for 25 years.
So old Gary McKinnon decides to hack into some government websites and computers and realizes that he's looking for information about UFOs and extraterrestrials, and this guy could get 80 years. I guess he's got to be punished for something. He did break into our computer system, but I'm not sure 80 years is fair. But what do you think this guy was really hacking into?
He was just seeing what he could find, and what he found was a list of the Secret Astronaut Corps. The Secret Astronaut Corps was formed at the same time that the Public Astronaut Corps was formed. But the Secret Astronaut Corps were the ones that were going to the moon in 1962, you know, and here we were just making suborbital flights and then finally an orbital flight.
So they had to shut him down very quickly.
Absolutely, because he has the goods there, and he's getting 80 years for what essentially I'm telling you.
You know, NASA issued a report just a few months ago that said that JPL may be withholding and might have withheld information from us, from the public, and they've called for an investigation. I found that to be an interesting story.
I love it. I love it.
You have looked into the horrible tragedy of Apollo 1, where Grissom, White, and Ed Chaffee died. But you believe there was another astronaut involved. Tell me about that.
Right. That was the fourth thing. I forgot to tell you, the insider told me, is that he was there when it happened. And when the fire occurred, what happened is NSA, the National Security Agency, who control NASA, they went to the top of the gantry there, and they sealed off the area for 45 minutes, and they took that one body out. And what they didn't want anybody to know is that, first of all, that someone was there, and they could, and they wouldn't be able to tell who he was because he was part of the Secret Astronaut Corps. So they had to keep him, the incident quiet forever and ever, and they paid off the family, and it's been a secret ever since, and it would still be a secret if I hadn't found out about it. So I started researching it, and, you know, I got, you know, one of my NASA insiders after, you know, some liquid persuasion, and I got the name of the guy. So if anybody comes to me and says, I think I don't know who that was, say, what's his name? And then I'll know whether he knows or not who the guy was. Now, as you know, at the Bay Area Conference, when I gave my lecture, we had a question and answer period, and one of the relatives of one of the astronauts that burned in the fire got up and said, the story is true. We all knew there was a fourth astronaut killed in that fire. And people say, well, I've seen Apollo, there's no room. Oh, yes, there is. There's plenty of room down there. As a matter of fact, the Apollo head, I think his name was Bill Shea, was supposed to be in there that day, and for some reason he wasn't. But there's plenty of room down there for, not plenty of room, but there's room for a fourth guy to help through all those countdowns and some of the problems that happened.
Do you think the initial plans for the Apollos might have been to have four astronauts go all the time?
No.
Just the three?
Yeah.
Well, what a shame, though. Definitely a tragedy. And again, the reason to cover it up is because it was the secret core.
Right.
Jeez. I mean, John, how much of this has been going on, and for how long? I mean, it seems like there's every area of government where there's some kind of suppression or non-disclosure or secret. It seems like it's in everything.
Yeah, you know, President Eisenhower warned us about this, about the industrial complex, and it's gotten to the point where... you know, I used to think if somebody was relatively well-informed, if they, you know, read a couple newspapers, a couple weekly magazines, you know, kept pretty much on what was going on, that they knew about 5% of what was really going on. Today, I don't think they know anything. Absolutely nothing.
When you were flying planes, did you think, beyond your wildest dreams, that you'd be stumbling into information like this?
Never. Never. I thought, you know, in those days, you know, the SR-71 was the coolest thing. I knew guys that flew it. I was the first guy to find out, you know, where Groom Lake was and start talking about it. And I thought that was the top of the top. What's interesting is there's a group of SR-71 pilots that that get together every 2 years in Las Vegas here. They're called Roadrunners. And what they were the original Blackbird pilots. After the CIA, of course, you know, the CIA started the Blackbird program, there was 13 what they called articles, and those are single-place airplanes. When the Air Force found out about it, that the CIA was flying back Blackbirds, they went to the Pentagon and said, hey, this is not right. We're supposed to be the guys flying spy missions. So the Pentagon turned it over to the Air Force. They went to Lockheed. They made the YF-12A, which was proof of concept for the SR-71. They made three of them, and then they made about 34 SR-71s. The guys that got the CIA guys ran it until about 1967. So anything prior to that, this association is called Roadrunners. And they call before the Blue Suiters got into them, and they meet. And the reason I'm telling you this story, George, is because when they get together, here it is, 2006, they toast their drinks to each other saying, and we're still the fastest. Now, that airplane, let's see, it's 2006, that's 40, it's 46 years old. Can you imagine somebody thinking that that our technology hasn't improved in 46 years to go from Mach 0.32 to something else?
No, when everything else has, and you add one more year to it as we begin 2007, you're absolutely right. I mean, just look at how the computers have advanced in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, 40-some year technology, no, there's no way.
So, you know, when I was flying and involved in that, I had no idea that I would ever stumble across anything like this. And then when I stumbled across it, you know, I met Bob Lazar, and whatever you think of Bob, you know, I believe he was there. I knew him for the 2 years, you know.
And you believe him?
Absolutely, totally, 110%. I went through that whole thing. It's just, you know, people say, oh, you just believed a story. No, I mean, he was the one that, you know, said, hey, John, they're going to test fly a saucer tomorrow night. Do you want to go see it? And me and Gene Huff and him and Bob's wife drove out there, and there's a flying saucer. And, you know, I had it in my Celestron 8 telescope, and I saw it. And so... they say, well, you know, maybe he was just a cook up at Groom Lake. And I said, well, if he was just a cook, then they tell the cooks when the flying saucers are going to be tested.
Yeah, exactly. And you're saying these launches to the moon are done at the South Pole?
I believe so, yeah, because if you Google Antarctica cargo, you will see a tremendous amount of traffic going into McMurdo and the other bases around there, a tremendous amount.
And I would guess launches from there would remain relatively secret.
Well, absolutely. And since they're anti-grav, they don't make any noise. I mean, they just head up to the moon. I doubt if it takes more than an hour to get there.
Are you telling me these things travel that fast?
Oh, absolutely. They're anti-grav.
My God. You mean once they get out of the atmosphere? Or from the get-go? Are they that fast from the get-go? What kind of G-force would be on somebody?
None, because the it's anti-gravity. You're carrying your own gravity with you.
So there's no G's at all?
Absolutely not.
That is just like warp drive, and off they go.
Off they go. And there's a tremendous story on AboveTopSecret.com. There's a guy that posts there, and you talk about a guy that has been around the universe. His name is Sleeper, and it sounds crazy, but I believe this guy has been there and done that. And he has a blog. You go to AboveTopSecret.com and find Sleeper and find his blog and read what this guy has to say. It's just fascinating.
He knows too much, doesn't he?
Well, he knows a lot, and I just love to read the guy. He grew up in Italy. He eventually went into the Army, and the stories he tells about the Army taking him to, you know, to these saucers and turning him over and walking down these plywood corridors and going off for a month or two are just, I mean, I believe it.
We are starting to get some incredible UFO reports lately, John, by really credible people, you know, pilots again, military people. What do you think's going on? Why these sightings again? I mean, are we just in another flap, a UFO flap, or is there something else afoot?
Probably something else afoot. I think those are our guys. I mean, we've had some fantastic vehicles, not as good as the aliens, but, you know, we do pretty good. All those black triangles are ours. They're not aliens. They're made down at Lockheed. They travel around this big thing at O'Hare. You know, that's probably us going out there, you know, for some reason, and I don't know what it is, probably to take our mind off Iraq.
That's an interesting thought. I've always believed those were ours. As a matter of fact, I know an editor for aviation magazine who is sure that those triangular objects are ours. Now, I don't know if they were reverse engineered, but he says what's flying around now is ours, and he says they're always by a military base.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a bunch of new secret bases. There's one in the middle of the Nevada test site. It's not technically Area 51. It's 35 miles west-northwest called Sandia. And it has three runways. They test a lot of things out of there. There's another one up by just to the south of Wendover, to the southeast of Elko. As a matter of fact, there was an article in the Review Journal, Las Vegas Review Journal, in January. Now, I had known about this one particular secret base that was just to the west of Dugway. We followed its progress and everything. It was kind of interesting. I had a friend who went deer hunting, and he was the one that originally found it. So we watched it for a couple of years, and then January of this year, Las Vegas Review Journal ran a story that the military was asking for a third large restricted area over Nevada. Now, there's the Nevada test site restricted area. There's the one up at Fallon. And then they wanted a third one. Guess where the third one was?
Wow.
Right over this area that's just to the south of Wendover. So, you know, I took it to my friends. I said, hey, looky here. They're putting a restricted area right over this secret base.
I love it. We're going to talk about your theory about the moon being towed into place. That's an incredible one. That's a controversial one, John Lear, as you know. And then we're going to bring in Richard C. Hoagland next hour to chat with John. Richard, of course, his Moon-Mars connection video showed that six-foot-high tower in the center of the visible moon. That was one of the things that sparked John's interest in all of this. We're going to have John and Richard just chat during a portion of next hour. And then the last hour, John will be here for your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM.